Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we've got some news to hit on. We've got some interesting things to talk about in terms of the Big Ten and the recent news report that they might be considering dropping divisions. The East and West would be no more. And then we'll talk, of course, about everything that's going on in the Twitter sphere and the Caleb Williams discussion, the Bobby Engram discussion. Seems like that's kind of been the focal point of Wisconsin Twitter and the outlets across the country in terms of recruiting. That seems to be the focus for a lot of people right now. So we'll get into that again. I know it feels like we've talked about Bobby Engram quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, but everyone's kind of waiting on bated breath on if that is going to be, in fact, the new offensive coordinator and what that might bring for Wisconsin at some other key positions. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Wisconsin hitting the recruiting trail and a couple other things in the news section, and then we'll get into our Nebraska recap. The Badgers came out, played a good game on the road, shot the ball well, tightened some things up defensively, so it was nice to see the team get back to their winning ways. And then they've got a quick turnaround against Minnesota on Sunday, so we'll, of course, get to that in our next episode. Matt, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Yeah, no, it's quite a bit of news here this past week. Nothing official, but things are getting a lot closer to coming to an end, at least in the coaching search-wise. And it was nice to see the Badgers get back in the win column on the hardwood for UW men's basketball. Although the women's team did get a W this past week as well, which was exciting to see.
There you go. They're building towards something. I know they've had a rough stretch, but it's nice to see them get a win as well. So good for both teams on the hardwood to get back to winning ways. So we'll talk about everything that stood out from them. I think there was some guys that had really good performances in that basketball game, including Chucky Hepburn going back to his home state. So I'm excited to get into all things Nebraska and Wisconsin. Before that, though, we'll get to our news section. Like we said at the top, one of the big stories out of this week is that the Big Ten is there's rumors per reports that the Big Ten is thinking about dropping divisions, which would essentially get rid of the East and West. This, of course, came from Iowa Athletic Director Gary Barta. He said the change could come as soon as the 2023 season. So when you're looking at the Big Ten, it's really been, of course, to a lot of people, and then fairly so, a conference that has been very heavy in the East when you've got Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State over there, and then the West has been, at least certain years, down a little bit compared to what we've seen in the East. You know, Wisconsin still had, I think, multiple years where they've been really the best team in that division, but how it would shake out differently based on if they shuffled this around and got rid of the divisions would certainly be interesting. So in terms of a Wisconsin fan and insider perspective that way, how would you feel about the Big Ten making this change? How do you think it would impact Wisconsin's chances at, of course, reaching Indianapolis and competing for Big Ten titles?
I think it can cut both ways, because I think in a positive light, it would mean that the Badgers would have one less Big Ten game that they'd be playing, which I think would help. Like, I think that would be a good thing. Everybody has talked about how grueling it can be. The Big Ten's one of the lone teams that right now have nine conference games. Now, sometimes that leads to games like Illinois, Maryland that you're like, gross. But it also can lead to really good games. But that is the physical pounding that adds on over the year. You know, pivoting over, if you bump it down to eight, you're obviously just going to play a round robin of other teams. It sounds like there would be some set amount of teams that you would have a rivalry with. I think he brought up three. So you would play three opponents annually, something like for Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota, Iowa, and pick one more in there that you are set. That's your schedule. I could see it being Nebraska, for example. And then from there, the rest of it cycles through with the other 10 teams. I think that would be interesting to watch, but I do think that it would also lead to playing some other non-conference games that are going to be really nice to see, and games that you want to see on television, such as Wisconsin taking on USC or UCLA, Washington, some really good matchups out there that I think could come about because of that, due to the alliance. I think what's interesting is you mentioned 2023. It's going to have to be kind of figured out here within the next year because their media rights deal ends after 2022. So this is something that if they do, it's going to probably drop either this off season or shortly after the football season because they'll want to have this figured out as they take bids from different networks for their packages. So I think this is definitely something that's being discussed in a real thing. I know Scott Docterman spoke with Gary Butter about it, and you know, Docterman does a really good job on the Iowa beat, and one of the most well-respected guys in the kind of Big Ten country. So I think this has some legs, and it's going to be interesting to see how far it goes and kind of what are some of the implications from it, because I think it benefits Wisconsin in some ways, but it also could make it a lot more difficult because you will be having to potentially – in certain years have to play Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State all on the same schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really an interesting – if it does in fact happen, how it goes about. And in some years, yeah, like you mentioned, some years you might get a luckier draw. Some years you might get a year where you're pulling, you know, three of those teams that have been top teams from the East. So it makes it interesting in that regard. I do think there's times where the West schedule can sometimes get – I don't want to say stale, but there's when you're playing, you know, a Northwestern who sometimes is down every year, Nebraska has been down, where all of a sudden you would like to maybe get, I think if you could get some more quality games on a more regular basis from drawing some of those East opponents, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Does it make the path to Indianapolis maybe a little bit harder for these teams in the West? Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that there's been times where the teams in the West have benefited from maybe a down division compared to teams in the East, but that's how it's set up. You play the games that are in front of you. So I think, yeah, as you kind of mentioned, it cuts both ways. It's kind of twofold where I think it could be good in some ways and certainly could be tougher in another way. But I think overall for the conference, this is a good thing. You've got now the chance to get, at the end of the day, what you want in doing something like this is to try and get your two best teams in your Big Ten title game. I mean, this past year, you probably would have saw a rematch of Ohio State and Michigan, and Iowa probably would have been left at home. Would that have given you a better product in Indianapolis for the Big Ten title game? Most likely, yeah. So I think you're looking at a situation where I think overall it's good for the conference. I'm glad you brought up the dropping the down to eight games, because I think that's almost the more interesting part too, is what happens, who that gets filled with. If it gets filled with a quality opponent, I think that would be even better. I don't want to see that new non-conference game that's possibly in the works just be thrown to, you know, an FCS school or a low, you know, group of five team where all of a sudden it's just another filler on the schedule, because I think there's conferences across the country they kind of use that fourth non-conference game as just a get-right week. And rightfully so, if you have the ability to do so, I can understand why. But I think it'd be really nice to see, like you mentioned, some quality games from that alliance, from other conferences. It's cool to see these nice non-conference matchups. So overall, I think both, if they could make it work and do that kind of these couple of ways and make sure that they focus in on some of that stuff, I think this could be a really good thing for the conference as a whole.
Yeah, and it's paired with something to where you have a deal with another conference, whether it be the Pac-12, whether it be the ACC, where you're going ahead and doing like a tournament-style kind of challenge, similar to what the Big Ten ACC does for basketball or the Gavitt Games with the Big East, where you are matched up with a team that's, you know, either of similar caliber from this year previous or some other different strategy that is kind of just a rolling thing. I think that would be a cool addition to it, because it helps build camaraderie between the conferences, especially given the way that kind of college football has been more regionalized now. So I think that would be one, you know, fun way that they could incorporate this. But I really hope that if they do this, they still leave teams with some autonomy with their scheduling, where they could go ahead and figure out and talk with another team from a different conference to get that set up, and maybe hold teams to a standard that, hey, you still got to play another Power 5 opponent. We're not dropping a good, you know, a Big Ten game that's going to have eyes on it regardless, because whether it's Rutgers versus Northwestern, those fan bases are still going to be checking in, so you're not, like you're saying, playing Northern Illinois out of nowhere. Instead, you're actually bringing in a good Power 5 team into your home or going to their place to play, because I think this is going to be driven by eyeballs and television views.
Hey, it'd be nice to maybe get rid of a team like Northwestern, who Wisconsin's had kind of thorns in their side for the last couple of years, to not play them every year. And I think that's the other thing. When you talk about those three protected games, you're probably talking Iowa and Minnesota are givens. Who would you say is maybe the third? Do you think Nebraska would be that third team and kind of keep that four-game or three-game slate with those four teams kind of together, or would it be somebody else like a Northwestern? Because I know in our comments on that post, there's been quite a few people that have been clamoring to keep Northwestern, but you would think you'd want to get rid of that team and get rid of the thorn on their side and keep a team like Nebraska, who you've had pretty strong relevancy over the last few years.
Yeah, I think it's hard because I think there's a bunch of different ways it could go. I think Northwestern would make some sense, but I think it would be Nebraska just because of location, like geography-wise. The Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa are the farthest west, really, that you're going to get in the Big Ten. So I think it makes sense to group those three, but then you also would end up with some teams like, if you go strictly based off of geography, you'd end up with like a really bad group of three with Illinois and Northwestern, mm-hmm. and say, you know, Purdue. Like, that's a completely different animal than you have Michigan, Michigan State, and Indiana, or Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Iowa. It's going to lead to potentially some issues there too, where it's not necessarily quote unquote fair for teams where they can think of that way. So I think it would be Nebraska, but I could see if through balancing things out, it's somebody like Northwestern or Illinois or even a team like Michigan State. I could see them bouncing them over. So I think they can go a lot of different ways, and I think it's going to be fun to see how this plays out, if it even does in the first place.
Yeah, that's certainly something to keep an eye on. Well, as that story kind of continues to develop, as you mentioned, the TV rights are going to be a huge part of it. They'd have to likely get something, at least a plan in place, kind of nailed down soon. And I'm sure that's been, you know, it's just been a report, so I'm sure there's been behind the scenes workings on that situation. We'll certainly keep an eye on it and update you guys as we find out more from what could be a big change to the Big Ten overall, coming as early as the 2023 season. All right, up next in terms of news, Wisconsin football, I will say the coaching staff has been out on the road. They've been busy. They've been throwing out quite a few offers. I had a couple offers in the 2023 group, which is really nice to see now that 2022 is really come and gone in terms of buttoning up that group as much as you're kind of seeing right now. Now the focus really turns to 2023 as a whole and what that group can, and now you're starting to see them kind of lay the groundwork, and you're going to start seeing these names continue to pop up. So, been a lot of offers in that group. Also, an unranked offer in the 2025 group, which is pretty crazy to see that you're already going out that far, but it never hurts to get in on some of these conversations. So, the recruiting staff has been busy and kind of trying to do the best they can. I know we've talked about it multiple times. They're trying to figure out what's going to be going on in that staff, but the position coaches have been out on the road, making some offers, which is nice to see. So any of the offers that have been thrown out stand out to you, or is it just nice to kind of see the coaches and the staff really hitting the trail hard?
Yeah, I think it's the big thing is just Wisconsin's being aggressive and going out, take advantage of this opening time where they can go out. I think it's going to be interesting to see if they do throw out any new quarterback offers. I know they're after Avery Johnson, but that's really kind of hasn't been much since. I know we talked with Braden Dorman here on the podcast, but I think he's trending away from the Wisconsin. So I think that's a position where it'll be fun to see if there's new offers go out, but really you're seeing Wisconsin be aggressive at some different positions, specifically defensively, to go after some new guys in the secondary, which I think is fun. I swear, Bobby April must just have a charter jet on speed dial to go down to Louisiana for Tackett Curtis, because he seems to go down there and visit him every other week, it seems like. But I think if there's one offer that I do think that was a good one, and we'll see if it plays out, is Amari Snowden out of Michigan. Wisconsin has some good ties to that area. Snowden's from Roseville, Michigan, and Wisconsin has brought in Jalen Franklin from that school. I think we talked a little bit about it, but of the group of offers that they've put out so far, that would be one that's interesting. Another one, safety Khalil Ali out of New Jersey. Once again, another area that Wisconsin has some good ties, has found recent success at, especially considering Hank Poteet's ability to recruit that area based off of his experience. So I think those two secondary offers are big, because I think those are two guys that they have a realistic shot at, that are high-profile guys and national recruits. So there's going to be more that are going to come out, and it's fun to see these guys get after it. But I think one other really interesting part about this whole thing was the fact that James Rogers, who's, if you don't know, he's an analyst on the team. He's been helping the team out on offense, but it's his second year with the Badgers last year after being in a developmental role at Oregon State, and he's kind of filling in for right now, the Badgers being without Gary Brown because of some health concerns. So I think that's one interesting development within it, because I think he's been hitting it hard and been somebody that has really kind of done some nice things for the Badgers in recruiting as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun to see the you know, the assistant coaches get out on the recruiting trail. And like I said, you're going to start to see these names really start to, you know, probably get familiar with as you work through and get into the 2023 weeds of really getting after a lot of these players. So I think the offers that you mentioned are certainly ones to keep an eye on. Some of these offers that they've thrown out are just kind of getting your name in the ring, trying to establish that initial conversation and get that offer in there to make sure you're in consideration for when a player starts to trim down his list. You know, you're going to continue to follow up with lots of phone calls and messaging, and as you mentioned, visits, continually to try and build that relationship. So there's a few on the list that have went out where you're just kind of thinking, okay, Wisconsin's just trying to get their name in the ring and hopefully make it a competition that way. But there are a couple others that, yeah, the ones you mentioned are certainly ones that I think Wisconsin can be competitive with. So it's fun to see, you know, when you pay so much attention to recruiting, it's fun to see this time of year when all of a sudden the offers are going out, you start to hear these names first time, and then you kind of watch their recruitment progress until eventually, you know, next thing you know, you're going to be in that 2023 signing day, and you're going to be, you know, talking about these guys as the next wave and crop of Wisconsin football. So it's good to see that the offers are going out. It's good to see that they're staying busy, and hopefully they can be competitive with some of these players, because there's a lot of talent, and you want to really make sure. I know we've talked about the recruiting staff kind of being up in the air. It'd be really nice for them to get that finalized and really put together a good 2023 group. I know the consensus across from a lot of different people is that the 2022 group, I think, is maybe a little underrated, maybe doesn't pack the same punch that the last couple classes did. So you'd like to see them really try to put together a strong 2023 class, and it starts right here with laying the groundwork early into February with getting some of these offers out.
Especially with the in-state crop not necessarily being what you're used to in that 2023 group, I think the 2024 group is going to be really fun. You've already seen some offers go out to some high-profile kids from within the state. But, I mean, specifically at Catholic Memorial, Arrowhead, some of the bigger powerhouse schools. But you look at it right now in 2023, seems like there might be a couple of hidden gems here or there, but a lot of those guys are going to probably be camp offers if they come about from inside the state, meaning you're going to have to really hit the ground outside of the state, and it starts now when you're going out and seeing guys lift, work out to try to build that early relationship, see these kids in person to give out those offers. And I like how Wisconsin is taking full advantage right now as the open period is continuing to roll on.
All right, up next in news, I know we talked about it seems like every episode the last few weeks in terms of the conversation with Bobby Ingram of course, possibly being the new offensive coordinator at Wisconsin. I think the hype train around what that could mean if he is, in fact, named the offensive coordinator is, of course, really picking up in the results of transfer quarterback Caleb Williams, who it was a rumor, it seemed like, a couple weeks ago. We talked about it, I think it was probably our first episode 2 weeks ago, where we talked about that as kind of an initial rumor that came out, really an interesting story. Everyone was kind of like, wow, that'd be really cool. But all since then, the steam with the Caleb Williams possibly transferring to Wisconsin seems to have really picked up. And who knows if it's just a lot of smoke around a small fire or if it's a really strong connection, but it seems to just be building and building and building to where all of a sudden it's gonna feel like some disappointment to a lot of Wisconsin fans if he does not, in fact, choose Wisconsin. But, of course, part of that becomes his decision-making probably hinders on being part and working with Bobby Engram that way. So it's a fascinating story. I still don't know what to make of the Caleb Williams situation in terms of like a percent, how I feel comfortable if he were to be at Wisconsin. Maybe now it's almost a 50-50 to see where he's going to end up between there and USC and maybe some other teams, maybe Georgia. I know it's still in the mix, but what do you make of the last week? Because it's been since Monday since we've talked, and since then the steam of this story has continued to pick up and people are getting really excited about it. So what do you make of kind of a wild week in terms of Wisconsin Twitter and the Caleb Williams situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first domino is that it sounds like we're recording this Friday morning. It sounds like Bobby Engram is going to be finalized today at some point, according to both Jeff Patricus and Colton Bartholomew. They've kind of come out and said that we've been talking about Bobby Engram as probably going to be the guy for 2 weeks now, right? Like that was a guy we said that was gaining plenty of momentum to be the guy. And then we were able to speculate that, hey, there is a prior relationship there with Caleb Williams. And sure enough, that started to trickle out as well and gain momentum. We've now seen this past week national writers, specifically CBS, On3, which is a new recruiting service out there, have all been kind of talking about this as a realistic possibility, not just, you know, kind of an afterthought. I still think USC is probably the betting favorite. I just think that previous relationship, Lincoln Riley's resume as a quarterback development guy is kind of off the charts. But I think Wisconsin, especially if this Engram news turns out to be true, which it from all accounts seems to be the case, I think that's the first domino that's going to help Wisconsin in this race. And I think it's a wait and see. I just think I wouldn't necessarily put it at 50%. I think it's a little less than that. I'm not getting my hopes up too much, but I definitely think that the odds have gone up as we've gotten closer to Bobby Engram actually officially being hired. It sounds like that there was a meeting at one point or another that, according to Evan Flood, that they met with his family, which I think is a pretty strong indicator. But it's a matter of can they get him on campus for the visit. They still have until mid of next week at this time to get him enrolled if it was for spring practice. Quick shout out, all the transfers are on campus, which is exciting. But I think for him, he really doesn't have to be here for the spring. I think he's a talented kid that is going to be able to come in and play. I think he is also not a dumb kid. He's going to get into whatever school he wants. And I think what's really important is because he is so intelligent, he knows he holds a lot of leverage right now. And so he understands that. He knows that other teams, Wisconsin included, are going to do different things to try to make it happen that he joins their team. And I think it's something where hopefully Wisconsin gets him because he is one of the top three quarterbacks going into next season for a reason. He's got multiple years of eligibility. It would be an absolutely gigantic get for Wisconsin based off of what he would bring to the table. But I still think I would be betting the field against betting on Wisconsin to win this one. But that's just the pessimist in me.
That's understandable. I can certainly – I think there's been – like I said, I think there's going to be a lot of people, if he does not, in fact, end up at Wisconsin, that will certainly be disappointed. with the hype train that he's got to the Badgers. I mean, there's a ton of connections there. It makes sense. But as you mentioned, this is likely the first domino's got to fall, and that's finalizing Bobby Engram. By the time this episode is out, maybe that's already been addressed and we know. And then the hype train will certainly continue to roll out and take off. And it's nice to see. I still think Wisconsin's got a shot. I do think, you know, you've got USC in there. I think it's really seems like in terms of connections, it seems like he wants to be in a place where he's got familiar connections with. So USC and Wisconsin seem like to be the two. Georgia is a team that's just coming off national championships, still probably in the mix, but it seems like he's got at least some narrow focus, and both would be good outlets for him to end up at. So it's been a crazy week. Where it ends up, we'll have to wait and see. But as you mentioned, this could go on for a little while. I don't think this is a situation where Caleb Williams has to, you know, finalize the decision anytime soon. He's got enough talent, especially if he were to end up at USC. He's going to be in the same familiar offense as Lincoln Riley. If you come into Wisconsin, yeah, he'd have to learn a new offense, but everybody kind of is. So if he's not there, like you mentioned, for spring, he's got enough talent that he could probably pick the offense up and really work on things and be fine if he were to come to Wisconsin. So it's a crazy story. It's an interesting story. It's one that we'll continue to keep an eye on, but it's been a fun week to certainly follow that. Whatever the end result is, it's been crazy to see Wisconsin kind of in that conversation and possibly ending up with a player like that would certainly be huge. But I think everyone's still kind of trying to be hesitant and not get hurt. And there's others that are fully on the hype train and are set up for some damages if he does not in fact end up at Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm hoping for the best, expecting the worst, and that's just like how I usually look at these transfer situations or any big time recruit for Wisconsin, which I know doesn't sound great, but it is what it is. But I do think that it does. You see some of the things putting together that makes sense for this move as Wisconsin being an actual possibility. I think UCLA, especially because they have the quarter system, is another team to look out for. LSU has been involved, I know, for a long time. So I there's a lot of people who are trying to get this kid to come to campus. And really, it's got to be a really tough decision for him. But I do think that the familiarity and relationship with Bobby Engram, the ability that if Bobby Engram comes in and brings some of the wrinkles that Baltimore has on offense with Lamar Jackson, it would fit Williams probably really nicely given his skill set. He's not as much of a runner, but he moves really well. He can run really well, but he's, you know, a pass first guy, whereas Jackson's more of a run first guy, but he also passes. So I think there's a lot of things that make sense. But it's just, we'll see. And hopefully that if Wisconsin doesn't get him, it doesn't completely burn bridges within that quarterback room. But I think Graham Mertz is smart enough to know, hey, my play was not perfect this past year. And this kid is, you know, the type of talent that Wisconsin, you know, insert team here would be stupid to not kick the tires on, especially if there's a prior relationship or in there in the recruitment. So we'll see. I think one other aspect of this whole of Bobby Engram being hired on likely today is how that affects the rest of the coaching staff, because I know we've talked about it a lot that there's going to have to be shuffling to make this work. And it seems like there's because of the health concerns right now with Gary Brown, like that there's kind of, it's up in the air as to what the Badgers are going to do. It might be one where they bring him in and then try to figure it out over the next couple weeks as hopefully they gain clarity on Brown's health. But I think Mickey Turner and Elvis Whitted are the two guys to specifically watch about where they end up. You know, are they still on the staff? Are they switched to a different role, et cetera? But it does sound like, according to Jeff Patrikis, he said that he expects Bobby April to take over at linebacker, something we've speculated for basically the past month at this point, like since, because it was the beginning of the month, right, where Joe Rudolph was announced to go to Virginia Tech. And even when those rumors dropped just, you know, for weeks before that, we had talked about, hey, it would make sense if April just took over as linebackers. So things seem to be coming together, and that's going to be something to definitely watch, because Gary Brown, really good running backs coach, you know, plenty on his resume, but the health concerns are definitely worrisome right now. It doesn't sound like it's cancer coming back, but he missed bowl prep for large chunks of it because of health concerns and is not on the recruiting trail right now. So there's definitely something there.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers, of course, with Gary Brown. He's been a really fun coach to get to know and follow as he's taken over at Wisconsin. So best wishes to him. Hopefully he gets better and can be back with the team as soon as he's ready. All right, before we round into basketball, we were going to talk, the last few episodes, we've, of course, done some depth chart talk. We're going to do that now with the inside linebacker room. And this one's going to be an interesting one because you look at this past year in terms of what you got from a position. I don't think you can ask for much more from any position than what you got out of the inside linebacker room with Leo Chenal and Jack Sanborn, two guys that were absolutely excellent. You know, you look at Sanborn, his entire career was great. Chenal had two, you know, really good seasons and then went into a year that was just absolutely dominating. But now you're going to look at and turn the page to both of them departing, and now you're really going to be looking at some new faces in that inside linebacker room. So before we get into that, I'll let you have the floor to kind of rant and rave about what Leo Chenal and Jack Sanborn did this past year, and then we'll talk about next year and what that might mean and who might fill in.
Yeah, they were absolutely amazing this past year. I thought they were a really good 1-2 punch inside for Wisconsin. And you look at it, they also had some nice depth with Mike Mascalunas behind them, a sixth-year guy that you could count on to help. But I think they're going to definitely miss those two. Just they were playmakers that brought such a tenacity to the defense that I think you're going to have to replace that, which is going to be tough, especially with how dynamic Leo Chenal was, both as a blitzer, but just overall as a playmaker. So I think it's going to be tough to replace them. They've got plenty of good options behind that. We'll see how they develop or how they take that next step. But really, I mean, looking back on it, this past year from Chenal was really impressive. And do you think that, like, where do you put his performance in terms of the past, say, decade or so of performances? Because I think you could make a strong case that you've got wildly good performances by, like, Orr. You also had TJ Edwards. But going back all the way to, like, Chris Borland, for example, where do you put his performance, Leo Chenal's performance this past year in kind of, you know, up against those guys who I think kind of have held the position to where it is right now and kind of set the standard?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think you right now you think of it and you go, man, you know, throwing Leo Chenal into the same conversation as a guy like, you know, you mentioned Chris Borland, Chris Orr, you've got, you know, Brian Conley going back for, as you know, through over the last decade. Right now it seems so fresh, but I think as you look back on it, you know, down the road, I think it's certainly a conversation where he's up there as one of those top guys. I don't know if I'd put him in front of Chris Borland as a guy that he was just so dominant and was seemed to be in there on every tackle. But this past season was pretty special for a guy like Leo Chenal to be maybe right behind there in that second tier of guys, you know, Ryan Conley, Chris Orr, Leo Chenal. I think that's a fair spot to rank a guy like that. If you're putting together a top list of the inside linebackers the past decade, I think Leo Chenal's up there in that conversation. Jack Sanborn, if you're looking at in career as a whole, would be up there as well. So they really got a lot of good production out of him. I know it seems like Leo Chenal's career was so quick in terms of having, you know, that initial year that was pretty good and just kind of a step behind to all of a sudden just dominating and then out the door. But you can understand, you know, his situation where he can go to that next level and really hopefully make an impact. So I think he ranks towards the top, and I think as we get further away from how special of a season it was and look back on it, I think we'll continue to kind of talk with him and talk about him with kind of that same nostalgia. We talk about guys like, you know, like Chris Borland, who was such a dominating player for Wisconsin during his time. So I think that's a fascinating kind of question and debate that you could certainly get into. But I think we'll look back on his season and really it'll rank up there towards one of the top ones from the inside linebacker room over the last decade.
Yeah, I honestly like thinking about it more. Like I've been thinking about it over this past week as I've kind of seen him. Like Pro Football Focus puts out their their mock drafts. Mm-hmm. You know, they just tweet him out, and it seems like he's on every damn one of them. So I find it interesting, and I really do, looking back at, because I think those are the four guys that are you can compare. Just, I know that Connolly had some really good years as well, but I think that he didn't quite bring the same juice as a guy like T.J. Edwards or Chris Borland or Chris Orr. But I really think that the only season from any of those guys that I would put over Leo Chenal's season this past year was sophomore year Chris Borland, where he went absolutely bananas with over 140 tackles, and he had like the 5 forced fumbles and interceptions and sacks. He just did everything, like blocking punts. Like, he just was an animal. But really, you look outside of that sophomore year, Leo Chenal had more sacks, more tackles for loss, just as many tackles as all the other guys. And I think that just speaks volumes to what he did in when he finally was able to go. And you consider the fact that he only did it in 11 games. Like, he had 115 tackles, 8 sacks, and almost 20 tackles for loss in 11 games. It's crazy to think what he would have had if he would have had that full allotment, similar to what some of these guys got in 14 games, for like Chris Thor, for example, in his senior year, because they made it to the Rose Bowl. So I think that's one thing that I think Leo Chenal is maybe even underrated, just based off of everything he did this past year. And I think you know, people in the pros know that he's going to be a good one, and I'm excited to see what he can do at the next level.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch in that NFL and wherever he ends up. As you mentioned, he's kind of been bounced around in those mock drafts, so where he ends up will be fun to see. But he's going to be a player that likely, you know, has had success with whatever team he ends up with. So obviously Leo Chenal and Jack Sanborn had phenomenal seasons this past year, and rightfully so. And we could rant and rave about those guys. We probably have an whole episode on those two and their production. But going into next year, there's certainly a lot of guys that are in the mix, and will be looking to, and the Badgers will be looking to take over in that inside linebacker room and then really have productive years. It's not like you get – it would have been almost a nice situation where if you had one move on and you still had another one to kind of stabilize that inside linebacker room. But now you've got a situation where you've got two guys that are going to be competing, or a handful of guys competing for two spots that really haven't played all that much football. So when you look to next year and who might be in there, which guys do you kind of have your eyes on as maybe the leaders in the clubhouse to take over in that inside linebacker room?
Yeah, I think it starts with Jordan Turner. I think when you look at how much playing time was distributed, he was a guy that every time that it went to the reserves, he was out there, and he made plays. He had those two interceptions, showed some nice things in coverage, and you saw his workload just kind of grow as the season went on. But I think beyond that, I think it's more of a toss-up. I think there's a lot of guys, but you don't necessarily know who's going to step up. Tatum Grass would probably be my guess. You look at the 2-deep throughout the year. Tatum Grass played in every single game, and he was listed in the 2-deep the entire year behind Sanborn, Chenal, and obviously Mayskalunas was in there too. But I would guess, if I had to guess right now, those would be the two guys that I would think would be given the first crack at it entering spring ball. But I think you've got a lot of other guys who could easily slide in there. I think Muma Jiangmeda getting back to being full healthy, which I think is big for his development. Another guy that has a lot of upside that could definitely play. Been in the program now. He's going to be a junior next year eligibility-wise, but it will be his fourth year in the program. And then Jake Chaney. Wisconsin, when they don't redshirt a true freshman, it's usually an indicator that they want this kid to play sooner rather than later. Jake Chaney did not redshirt, so maybe he's a guy that could jump in there. A little undersized at 5'11", 222, but at the same time, he's talented. So I think those guys are the ones that I would be looking to, but you never know with some of the young guys. Jake Ratzel. I think we've been higher than anybody on him. He's just so athletic with that hockey background that you wonder what he could do. Had an interception in fall camp that was really impressive. And even, you know, some of the guys maybe at outside linebacker, if Bobby April is taking over the position, maybe you see some movement there to try to get your best four on the field. This year seems like it's a little less cut and dry because the inside linebacker room is a little bit younger. But even Brian Sanborn, another guy, can he follow in his brother's footsteps and make an immediate impact early in his career? But if I had to guess right now, I would go with Grass and Turner. But I think Jake Chaney is the guy to watch out for, although I do think Muma Jiangmeta could make a move as well.
Yeah, I think Jordan Turner is probably, in terms of the group, the odds-on favorite right now. He's been I thought he was impressive in the limited amounts of snaps we saw him. But as you mentioned, how that play time was distributed, he seems like a guy that's going to be in there and gets first crack at that spot. And I think he'll really have success once he gets in there. I'm excited to see his growth and development into next year. Like you mentioned, Jake Chaney, I know when we had him on the podcast, I was left really impressed by him. Really a guy that did not seem like he was going to be, when we talked to him, was, you know, a senior in high school and going to be going into college. He seemed to have a really strong understanding of the game, and it's not really a surprise to me that he didn't redshirt and could be a guy that works into the fold next year. He just seems like a guy that's beyond his years in terms of age and development that way, and as you mentioned, a little undersized, but I think could be a guy that pairs in there nicely. And then, you know, the other group, Tate Grass is always a guy that has, you know, when he's been out there, he's kind of flown around the field. You've heard his name called that way. So he's one of them. Muma Jiangmeta, I know he's been banged up. He's certainly a guy that will be in the conversation and could make a group. But it's going to be, once again, you know, every position that we've talked about on the defensive side of the ball has some sort of competition versus, you know, going into this year, we knew that inside linebackers, Sanborn and Chenal, if they were good to go, were going to be out there 98% of the time, and you have Mascalunas to fill in that other two. You're essentially having to, you know, replace 100% of your production with a group of three, four, maybe five guys. If you include Rosloff as a guy that's so athletic, could be in that conversation as well. So it's going to be a fun group to watch. And really, you know, I think Jordan Turner is probably a guy that is right now got one spot pretty, I wouldn't say solidified, but he's in a pretty good spot at this point. But then the other spot, it could be a whole host of those four, or it could be, as you mentioned, somebody from the outside bouncing in. How that inside linebacker spot works out is going to be fascinating, because you need bodies that are ready to play and ready to start, but you're going to need some production pretty quickly from someone in that group.
Yeah, I could see it be in a committee approach this spring, mm-hmm. where they're just throwing different combinations in there to see who is consistently playing at a high level. I do think, though, that Grass and Turner will get the first looks. I just think that they present something a little bit different than the rest of the group. But I think another wild card in this, I mentioned that I think Chaney is a guy that could easily jump up. I think Rasloff is a guy that could easily come out of nowhere and grab a starting spot. But another guy, Aiden Vaughn, coming in as a mm-hmm. true freshman, enrolling early, late bloomer. So I don't know if it's necessarily something where we should expect him to be in the mix right away. But we saw that Wisconsin has shown the ability, especially if it's Bobby April. Bobby April threw Nick Herbig in there right away. When they needed him, he was a starter, and he's been a starter since day one of his college career. So April has shown a willingness to say, okay, get out there, let's go, even with not a lot of experience. So I think that it's a new position for Vaughn, so it might be a little bit different of a transition, whereas Herbig came from a very similar system and was playing a very similar position. But I think the athletic intangibles are there, that he could be somebody that could push and maybe surpasses his four-game threshold. But I just think there's so many different guys in here that it's hard to predict the inside linebackers. I think this is probably maybe the hardest group to predict overall, just because nobody really stood out as the guy other than maybe Turner you can make an argument for, but he still only played in six games last year, whereas Tate Grass played in 13.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating group to watch as we move into next year, so we'll continue to talk about all sorts of depth chart conversations. We've worked through quite a few positions on the defense, but we'll continue to work that way and finish up. We've got the defensive line left, and then we'll get into the offense. All right, guys, that wraps up our football talk. So now we'll get into some basketball talk. Before we do that, I've got to talk to you guys about Home Field Apparel and their latest addition to Big New Saturday Season 3. So you guys aren't familiar with it, Big New Saturday dropped last weekend. The first installment was the Cincinnati Bearcats, where they dropped some nice T-shirts, some nice sweatshirts, and the whole collection for that school. If you're still interested in signing up, you can. You would just you would only have the 7 weeks of Big New Saturday, but still a nice savings if you're looking for a T-shirt every single week. You know, the regular price is $32, down to $20 if you join up at homefieldapparel.com. I think this weekend they're launching Gonzaga. I know this season is all basketball-themed schools, so if you're looking to pick up some nice, comfortable T-shirts with some cool retro logos, Home Field Apparel is your spot. They do have a Wisconsin collection. I think sometimes we talk about the ads. We forget to mention that. But they have a very, really cool Wisconsin section that they've had out there for some time now, which is part of Big New Saturday Season 3. So make sure to go over and check them out at homefieldapparel.com if you're looking for some new gear that's got incredible comfort all over it. Because I think if I speak for both Matt and I, we've got Home Field litters our closet and our wardrobe. So make sure to go over and check it out and get something for yourself. All right, up next, we've got some basketball talk. Nebraska and Wisconsin, the Badgers, of course, went into Lincoln and overall, I think, played pretty well. You look at it, it wasn't necessarily the best game from Johnny Davis and Tyler Wall, but some other guys stood up and played really well. Brad Davison was incredible, just knocking down three after three. I think the big story, in addition to him, was Chucky Hepburn going back to his home state. A lot of emotion for him and played really well, knocked down a couple threes. Played well in the defensive end, and really, I think the team as a whole got back to their winning ways after kind of sitting on that Michigan State game and then having a sour taste in their mouth that way. So overall, what were your takeaways from a nice win for the Badgers?
Yeah, I think the big things, it was nice to see Wall out there. You know, he didn't get much going on the offensive end, had three turnovers, 1 of 5 shooting, but did grab 10 rebounds. But 22 minutes, I think that was about the perfect sweet spot for him. You didn't want him going the full way, similar to like what we saw from Brad Davison and Johnny Davis. But I thought they used him in a way to kind of get him into a rhythm, but also not stress that ankle too much. It was nice to see Ben Carlson get in there. He played just as many minutes as Wall, which I think was intentional by Greg Gard, not only because he was playing pretty well, but also because you wanted to continue to give him some playing time and take some of the stress off of Wall. But he had a really nice game at 6 points, 5 rebounds in those 22 minutes. But I think the story for me, beyond Davison breaking the 3-point record, which, I mean, part of it is just because of longevity. He's a fifth-year guy. But also was Chucky Hepburn coming into the game, mourning the loss of one of his best friends. In his home state, coming out and hitting a three immediately, putting together one of his best performances of the year. And really, it was on both ends. Like, we've seen him kind of be streaky where he's had up and down games, which you'd expect from a freshman, but 13 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals. I thought he just played really well. And I thought that that was a really nice thing to see, especially given everything that he's been through here recently. For him to go out and play the way he did was huge for the Badgers, especially in the first half when Wisconsin, like you mentioned, Davis had 0 points in the first half. Tyler Wall wasn't able to get it going on offense. So to have Hepburn step up and hit some big threes, I think was a big part of why they left Lincoln with a W.
Yeah, I think you're starting to see now, you know, of course, as teams kind of adjust and opponents know, you're coming into that game, Johnny Davis has been incredible all season long. Tyler Wall has been, you know, the last, over that winning streak, that 6-game winning streak has been really dominating. So the focus is, of course, going to be on those two, and that's going to create opportunities for Brad Davis and Chucky Hepburn, you know, whoever else in there, Crowell, but Carlson. All those guys are going to get their chances to get the ball worked through them because the focus is going to be on those other two a lot of the time. And when they're not getting it going, they need someone else to step up. And Brad Davison's kind of been that guy all season long. And, you know, there's been games where it's been Stephen Crowell. I think Chucky Hepburn's had some good games overall. But this, I think, was one of his top games offensively to put together what's been a – I'd say defensively, he's played really well most of the season, being out there and locking up some strong point guards and then holding them down. But offensively, there's been, as you mentioned, some games where he hasn't shot the ball as well. And then last night or yesterday afternoon, he was really shooting well and knocking down shots. And he looked like he had a really confident shot. So – hopefully that can continue to build for him. And, you know, the Wall and Davison and Johnny Davis are still going to be your top options, but to have a guy like Chucky Hepburn that you can feel confident and play through as well if you need to knock down some shots is great. So it was nice to see him really play well. As you and I have both mentioned, very emotional for him, but hopefully that can kind of springboard him to continue to play well. And we'll see, of course, they've got a quick turnaround with Minnesota this upcoming weekend. So it was nice to see them get a win, but It's now going to be right back to focusing in on another conference opponent. And I know Minnesota's kind of basketball sometimes can be down, but it's always still a rivalry game, and you're going to get their best effort as well. So it should be a quick turnaround, but fun to watch what this team can do shortly after that Nebraska contest.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska just sucks. They haven't won a Big Ten game. They just continue to flounder no matter who's in there as a head coach. But you look at it, and I think another guy who really deserves some credit was Brad Davis. And I know he's always shot well against Nebraska for some reason. But looking at it, this year he's really putting together a really good final season. He's shooting his best from two-pointers, which last year 27%, hard not to do better, but he's doing the best of his career there, shooting about the same as he was last year from three, which was definitely not the issue last year. But I mean, he is putting together a really good year at almost 16 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, right? Like, he is putting together a huge year and really giving Wisconsin a really strong backcourt this year with Davis and Hepburn also playing really well. And I just think that deserved mentioning. But another guy, Stephen Crowell, continues to kind of just improve. And I think that that's been something that's been really fun to watch. You look at it since that Iowa game. 12 points, 9 points, 9 points, 10 points, 9 points, 12 points. That's consistency from him, and you've seen him be more aggressive. I like that he took 10 shots in this past game, and he's put them evenly, inside and outside. I still think Wisconsin has plenty to work on. Inside scoring at times, even though Crowell did some okay things at times, Wisconsin really struggled, especially in the first half at Bunnings. They were like 14% in the first half on two-point attempts. They were horrendous with some lobs that were – it looked like they should have had at least one of those alley-oop attempts work. Like, they were just not great passes. But plenty to work on. But I thought defensive intensity was up, which was a big reason for the win. Holding Nebraska down to the 65 points was huge. But I think this was just a really nice win on the road to kind of get right after you were licking your wounds from Michigan State.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this sets up really nicely for this team to really get to work some things out. You know, defensively, they didn't look their best against Michigan State. Offensively, there were some struggle spots, and I think they kind of cleaned all that up. I think they're really good on the glass. I thought the bigs were really good at creating second-chance opportunities with Vogt and Carlson and Crowell in there. All in Ed Wall as well. All of them really good on the boards, creating some of the second-chance opportunities on the offensive end. Defensively, it seemed like a lot of things were tightened up. I know Nebraska, they've got some athletes. They don't necessarily have a super deep roster, and as you mentioned, it's been a struggle for them really the last few years. Since they kind of joined the Big Ten, it's just that Nebraska basketball has never really taken off. But I think you're in a situation where they tried to get out and run, and Wisconsin did a good job kind of slowing that down, especially in the second half. So it was a tune-up game. You felt comfortable about this game going in, but when you didn't have top performances, you know, when you go into a game and you don't get great performances from Johnny Davis and Tyler Wall, you wonder, you know, can that be a game where a team hangs around? But thankfully, the others really stepped up and did a great job. So it's nice to see this team back out there, get that losing taste out of their mouth, get a win under their belt, and get ready for another contest against Minnesota in a quick turnaround this weekend.
Yeah, it's another big game. Wisconsin's got to come out with a W in this one if you're wanting to continue to stick at the top of the Big Ten Conference. When you look at their schedule, it was big to get that Nebraska win. That was a game you needed. Same with this Minnesota game. You've got to take care of business because Big Ten play is going to only get tougher from here. So I think this is another big game that they got to take care of it.
It'll be fun to watch. And, guys, make sure you tune into that basketball game as we mentioned. It's a quick turnaround. Kohl Center on Sunday. Tip time is set for noon Central, and that will be on the Big Ten Network. So make sure to tune into that. And we'll, of course, cover that and recap it on our Monday show. Hopefully the Badgers can come away with the victory. All right, guys, that wraps up another episode of the podcast. As always, thank you for listening on Wisconsin. Thank you.